Recently, Mwango Spaces this week, because we have gotten a really good speaker, the Group Director of Finance at KCB. Thank you for joining us, Lawrence. KCB reported the FY23 results last week on Wednesday, and we are lucky to have Lawrence here to break down the results for us, all of us as investors, customers of KCB, and entrepreneurs in the audience also want to listen in to all this. So without further ado, I'd want Lawrence maybe to introduce yourself and say maybe a bit of your journey towards becoming a CFO. Maybe share that a bit and then we can get started.
Thanks, Mokaya. And good afternoon, everybody. Good morning if there's anybody who's not within the same time zone I'm in. My name is Lawrence Kimathi. I'm currently the Group Finance Director for KCB Group. Been here since 2015. Time does fly very quickly. I didn't think I was going to do more than 5 years here. Before that, I was the Group Finance Supply Chain Director at East Africa Breweries. I know that is quite a mouthful. I was doing finance and supply chain. EABM just created a finance function for that to ensure that they sorted out the big issue they have on supply chain. Before that, I worked for a very long time with the BAT, British American Tobacco. That was actually my first job. Rose up to be the Sub-Sahara Finance Director and went off to work in the head office in London for a short stint. And then when I came back, I went off to EABL. So in a nutshell, that's been my journey.
Just tell us a bit now about KCB and maybe what was your motivation in terms of joining, and then you can segue straight into giving us a bit of a bird's eye view of the performance in 2023 for the bank.
KCB, I think, is a well-known bank. It's an institution that has been around for well over 125 years. We are in 7 countries. It's been expanding. The first foray out of Kenya was back in 1997, opened a subsidiary in Tanzania. It's the oldest subsidiary. And then from there, went through the change of name from Kenya Commercial Bank to KCB, because then you expand in regionally. You don't want to say the way when we were growing up, we used to say Kenya Bus here, Uganda. So you don't want to say Kenya Commercial Bank and you're based in Uganda or Tanzania, hence the rebranding. In the last 7 years or so, we've really gone out on an expansion. Geographically, we believe that East Africa block will play a very important part in not just the individual country growth, but also a catalyst for growth in Africa, hence positioning ourselves strategically to be in the countries that will be driving that. My motivation to join KCB essentially came from the fact that I had never worked for a local company. I had worked for multinationals all through. Multinationals had exposed me, given me very good training, very good foundation, but I felt I needed to now be the person or the leader playing that role of head office. And KCB were looking for a CFO at that time. So I just made my applications and I got the job. And it's been rewarding. It's been tough. It's been stretching. The fact that you do not have a quote unquote a London head office to ask for direction and guidance makes you have to sharpen and stretch yourself to be the leader that the people looking up to you expect.
When we go to the results, I think there's something here that you just touched on that people don't usually discuss. I think there's quite a distinction between local banks and the foreign banks with the global offices and all. And maybe you can touch on that a little bit and how that has shaped your experience at KCB.
It's the way multinationals work is obviously fairly different from local banks, depending on who you ask. Because if you ask my team in Rwanda, they will say that we operate like a multinational. There are a number of aspects of differentiation. One, speed to decisioning. You'll find that in local banks. So local banks, because you're the head office, you've got your board with you. If you have a good idea, some good initiative, you just need to reach out to the board, especially if it's a board level decision, like an acquisition, for instance, and get that done. So speed to decision, and you'll find that is quite fast on the local bank side. The muscle and the memory bank of institutional memory, you'll find that techniques, innovation, you'll find that the multinational banks are likely to have a better of that, because someone in Asia will have done a product that can easily be picked and copied and pasted and can work locally. But with the information being democratized, I can also pick what HSBC in Hong Kong has done and find a way to very quickly implement, execute and commercialize it here as well. So that has also meant that the fact that you've got a big network globally doesn't necessarily give you that fast to market experience or advantage, because as I said, the internet has really helped us be able to reach out on such information.
Now we can go back to the results. results. Give us a bit of a high-level view, a bird's eye view maybe of the results that you released last week for KCB for FY20.
Our results were a mixed bag. And I say a mixed bag for a number of reasons. One, when you look at our balance sheet, we had a really good balance sheet performance in 2023 compared to the previous year. Our total assets grew 40%, propelled by very good performance on deposits, which grew by about 50% to close at 1.7 billion. Then those deposits were utilized to underbank some money in terms of loans, in terms of government security investment, in the short-term funds placement. So the balance sheet, when you look at the key parameters, grew well. The only aspect in the balance sheet that I would say continues to be a concern for us is asset quality. We maintained an NPL ratio of 17.3, but the stock of NPL did go up from 161 billion to about 208 billion. So that is definitely a concern for us. It's something that we have said in the past, we given priority. And the bulk of this is driven by KCB Kenya. We saw first the environment was not very conducive for asset quality remediation. And secondly, we also saw a lot of judicial activity when we foreclosing a customer and we want to either sell off their property, they make a quick dash to the courts, get an injunction. We win upon hearing, then another injunction. So it just lengthens the process, but the process has an end and eventually we get in. So that's on the balance sheet side. On the income statement side, very good top line growth driven by that balance sheet performance. So about 27% growth in the revenues in the year, driven by both interest income, which grew 45%, and non-interest income, which also had a very good performance, especially coming out of service fees and lending fees. We did see a small drop in the FX income year on year, mostly driven by one, consciously trying to ensure that our spreads are too high. We're trying to be the leader and big brother to manage the FX rate in the year. And secondly, the base, which was 2022, if you recall, that was an election year, volatile in terms of market volatility. And that's when you find the treasurers really making a lot of money on the Forex income side. The bottom part of the income statement, however, that's a PAT, year-on-year drop of 8%. And that was mostly impacted by the fact that our ECL or loan loss provisioning grew by 155% from 13 billion in 2022, about 33.6 in 2024. Bulk of that was driven by KCB Kenya. 81% of that increase, or rather that 33.6 billion came out of KCB Bank Kenya. And that was partially driven by the exchange rate and also by the downgrades, about 55 billion downgrades that we had in the course of the year. That's why I said it was a mixed bag. The good news out of that is when your performance is growing, driven by the fundamentals of top line, it shows that there's sustainability in it. If your PBT is driven mostly by cost cutting, and I said this, I think, in the quarter three results announcement, that nobody can ever cost cut themselves to prosperity. You've got to have the fundamentals of your revenues showing that they are growing. And that's what KCB as a group demonstrated in 2023. So allow me to pause there and maybe just take questions or any clarifications needed.
Yes, so dig into a couple of those segments that you just discussed. We'll start with gross loans. Gross loans grew around 4% last year. The 32% of that growth was outside KCB and Kenya. So maybe you can give a bit of flavor there in terms of who are you lending to in that regard, and also how customer deposits came in at the year. So gross loans versus the deposits for last year. It's been a tepid kind of environment last year. So to see loan growth up 24% is pretty impressive, given that also most banks also would rather maybe lend to the government, but you're lending to people and businesses. So maybe who are the people taking up the loans and what's your experience in terms of dealing with them in the past year or so?
Yes, you're right. When you look at the return coming out, just specifically focusing on KCB Kenya, if you look at the return that came out of government paper in terms of asset yield, yes, one can argue that why not just pump your money in there? But I think as a banker, you've got to always have a balance. You need to deploy your funds in what will give you sustainable income. That's really lending. That's one of the key areas of banking. And then you take opportunistic investments when the yields are good on the government side. So in terms of where the loans were going, we did grow quite a bit on the manufacturing side of business. We've seen manufacturing coming back, but it's also a two-pronged appetite, if I may use that word, from manufacturing. One, because of inflation and the impact of the exchange rate, just to sustain working capital for the manufacturing world, you needed a 30% increase in your facilities. So if you import and you were importing in January last year at an exchange rate of 100, just for you to be able to maintain the working capital requirement at the end of the year using an exchange rate of 157, you would have needed to borrow more. So the working capital bit, on especially on overdrafts, we saw that that increase. But there was also an element, especially towards the end of the year, there was also an element of just CapEx investments that came through in manufacturing, which is a good indication of confidence coming back that manufacturers are looking to continue investing in the country. I think the other part we saw was in the area of our sector, what we would call energy and water. And that's where, you know, we see a bit of G2G coming through. We've seen a bit of renewable energy coming through there as well. And there's a part of G2G sits at the non-funded. It's really trade finance, but there's an element that we also fund some of the off-takers. Looking at the rest of the group, we had subsidiaries like KCB Uganda, KCB Tanzania, and TMB, who also had a very good growth on their lending. KCB Uganda is predominantly SME, but they also did take some large ticket sizes in areas like sugar, areas like cement, which the bigger chunk of that was written syndicated with KCB Kenya. TMB the same in DRC. Some big ticket sizes, especially on cement, which the bigger chunk of that was also syndicated from the KCB Kenya side.
Impressive on the loan growth. Maybe one of the dark clouds that have been hanging around KCB for the past couple of years, I would say, is the NPLs. And I think it's talked about a lot, but very few people tend to dig in and understand a little bit. So you did say part of the increase in NPLs in the past year has been issues to do with FX. So maybe you can break down a little bit to the investor and the customer listening in. What exactly is an NPL and how does it evolve from a loan to become an NPL? And then how come it's been a problem at KCB for the past couple of years? So maybe you can break down a bit and then give the investor a bit of flavor on what you're dealing with.
Okay. So an NPL is an acronym standing for non-performing loan. And we do have IFRS, which is now accounting treatment. And we do have the regulatory side of treatment. So if you borrow from us and you do not service your loan for more than 90 days, so you're what we call 90 days past due, then you move into a category where we watch you. So CBK gives us 5 different categories, 1 to 5. Some people say 10 to 50, where 1 is really good. 2 is a bit of concern. You're getting into watch. When you get to 3, you actually categorize as non-performing. 4 is doubtful and 5 is bad debt. So using those, then we would come and look at the percentage in value of the loans that have gone past grade 30 and divide that with the total loans that have been issued, and you get the ratio that is non-performing loan ratio. When I say the stock, so like when earlier on I said 208 billion shillings stock of NPL, it means that is the quantum of the loans that are not performing out of our balance sheet of 2.2 trillion total balance sheet. But the NPL ratio is now that figure divided by your loans. I hope that sort of gives a flavor of NPL.
Yes. And now I think to the main question, which is how come KCB has been having an issue with this in the past couple of years? So maybe you can speak to that and also speak to NBK. We'll come back later to deal with the NBK sale. So first, let's deal with the NPL side of KCB and NBK.
Okay. So a few reasons why. One, I'll say a number of these are legacy loans, which for a long time we've been trying to rehabilitate. Some of them were coming close to getting back to performing, and then 2020 COVID hit, and that just threw them out of recovery, the impact of COVID between 2020 and 2021. So there's a number of legacy issues. There's the core reason of that would be the basically just the underwriting or loan origination. The process of loan was not done the best way. We have a second part where it's related to the big amount of pending bills from government. We do have a substantial share in road construction, building and construction. There is contractors who have gone and built roads. They have borrowed from us. They have not been paid by the paymaster, and that's the government. And if they're not paid for the work they've done, then they cannot service their loan. So we have got to do what we are required for compliance purposes and categorize that as non-performing. So there's a roads. There's also county, a number of SMEs that got into county businesses. And I think that the figure that is quoted in terms of pending bills is close to about, I think, 600 billion that between the central government and the counties, they all supply. And then you've got now the third category, which I'll generalize as from an operating environment point of view. Remember, 2022, we had elections, so a bit of slowdown in business activity. 2023, we've seen from the global macros, the global headwinds coming into the country. We had inflation, we had FX. That general shortage of disposable income, the customers then hits the sale and cash flows of particular customers. And if they can't meet their cash flows, then they are unable to generate enough to service their loans. And then the loans would go out into non-performing.
And a significant part of the NPLs and NPL provisions was also the FX bit. So I think you can speak about that and also speak a bit about the coverage ratios. And I know the non-performing, one of the slides, I think you said, the non-performing loan book has full coverage from cash provisions and collateral held. So I think that would be a good thing to maybe expound a bit to the investors.
So on the foreign denominated facilities, and maybe let me just give a very simple example. If in January 1st, 2020, just hypothetically for ease of example, the exchange rate to the dollar was 100. If the $1 million loan with us, in our balance sheet, we will have shown, because our reporting currency is shilling, then we would be having 100 million as your loan balance. Assume that you have collateral that is valued at 100 million. And then for us, we do not need to take any provision for you. Assume that the 100 is for sale value because your loan balance equates to the value of the collateral. So if you defaulted, we will sell your collateral for what it's valued at and we will recover. Fast forward to half year, June, and the exchange rate has gone to 140. We will carry you in our balance sheet as 140 million Kenya shillings. But remember, your collateral is local, so it does not change. It still remains as 100 million. So both from an IFRS and from a prudential guideline point of view, it means that if you defaulted and we sold your property, we would only raise 100. So we have got to recognize the difference, that 40 million into the balance sheet as a potential loss for the future in the event that happens. So in a nutshell, basically, that's the explanation on the impact of the FX. So we've started the year at 121, I think. We closed the year at 157. So about a 27-28% depreciation of the shilling. And that part squarely got into the income statement.
And one very important slide also from your presentation was about some of the actions you're taking to address NPLs. So speak to that so that you can assure investors that you are really working on these NPLs, which have been a bit of a dark cloud hanging around for the last couple of years.
Let me start with just engaging government to resolve the pending bills. We know there's a committee that was set. There's a committee that was gazetted. So it is a legal committee. It's been going through the pending bills, both for national government and counties. Once they start paying that, we expect that that should then give the cash to the customers and they will service their debt. I also spoke to disposing assets, especially high value collateral. This was slowed down last year from a court point of view, a judicial system point of view, as I mentioned. A lot of people rush into court, put injunctions. The good thing is that you can only go to court so many times. And once you run out of that road, then the bank then takes the necessary action. We are fast tracking the measures to recovery. We did have about 18 billion of recoveries. A number of these customers who are in NPL are actually also government institutions. So we are also in discussions with government on how they're going to fund them and hence pay what they owe. So we've got a category that is state-owned enterprises, and that actually is being run directly by the GCEO, having discussions with the various ministries. And that is a chunky element. And then the other is we've got a special team that looks at this. We actually call it a special assets team and recoveries. They look at these assets and come up with ways of resolving. We didn't complete last year, but it's going to complete this year, where one of the non-performing loan, which is in manufacturing, now private entity farmers come and they want to buy equity into it. And as they put in the money for equity, that money will come and offset the loans that we are owed by the customer. So we're seeing a bit of interest on PE coming to invest, especially in areas that they are interested in. We've got two big non-performing customers who have already been issued non-binding offers to be bought off by some international buyers, totally in different fields. One is in transport, one is in steel. Again, we're just waiting for that process to close, get a binding offer, they do their due diligence, and then they firm up their sale. So quite a bit going on.
That's a lot. We hope at the end of the Q1 briefing, you can be able to give us a bit more on that. So now we can move on a bit to NBK, which has also been, if you look at the capital ratios, they are the ones which have been non-compliant for a while. What's your thesis around selling it? What's the reason maybe for buying it? How much capital have you put in and what do you expect? So maybe you can give investors your expectations about NBK going forward this financial year since you're almost closing the deal.
So when we bought NBK back in the end of 2019, the plan was to integrate it into KCB Kenya and make some savings out of their cost base. So you bring in revenue because you're bringing in loans and deposits. deposits. And then because you've integrated it into a network that is larger than NBK, you can close branches. It certainly could close at least 80% of the branches and take some cost savings from that exercise. Then when we got in, had a number of meetings with customers, and we realized that the NBK customers are quite loyal. So we realized that just because you have integrated to KCB does not mean that customer is going to stay with you. In fact, some customers told us when we opened accounts at NBK, it's not that we did not know KCB existed. So that was a bit of a wake up call.
That's a really good thing to keep in mind, especially for banks. That you don't just someone has bought up the bank that you're banking with.
Absolutely. So then we thought, okay, let's run it. We knew that NBK was heavy. The number of staff compared to what they were generating, it was clear that there was opportunity to right size it. Remember, I said we bought NBK end of 2019. March 2020, COVID happened. The plans we had of right-sizing, we decided let's shelve it. It is not the right thing to do. We are a Kenyan entity. It's not the right thing to do to start laying off people. Already there are enough problems. And nobody knew how long COVID was going to last for. So initially you thought it was a passing cloud. By end of the year, we'll be okay and we will continue. COVID itself did put a bit of pressure on the performance of NBK, which meant they required capital. So we put in a chunk of I think the first amount of capital we put in 2020 was about 5 billion. At the end of that year, because of performance, we added another 3 in 2021. And I think we did another chunk of about 3, which we had put as tier 2 capital, but later converted into core capital. So based on the shakiness of performance, not getting traction from a revenue generation, litigation started becoming a bit of an issue. In 2023, we got hit by that one large one that took NBK into loss making. We had to sit back and think, okay, it cannot be the same old strategy of recapitalizing NBK. To that as we has been tried, tested, doesn't seem to be working. We went into now, let's look for other options. And the two options that were available to us was integrate or sell. We luckily were able to get a willing buyer and ended up with signing the deal last week on 20th of March to sell it. So I think it is the right thing to do, both for the investors of KCB Group and also for NBK, because selling means you've safeguarded jobs. If we integrated, it meant that a number of jobs would have been lost for sure. But selling, the new owner will come and take a view, but the new owner will definitely need a lot more of the people who are already there. Secondly, it's a direct investment into the country, so it's good for the economy. You're getting money that is coming in from out and coming into the economy. Also, from a sentiment point of view, shows the country is open for business and people and investors are willing to come in and put their money in.
And then speak a bit about the multiple you sold it at. Are you going to make money from the deal? And what's the time frame in terms of closing it?
The multiple is 1.25 times book. With a pro forma we've done, I would say we will not lose money. NBV net book value is obviously determined after you do a completion audit. There might be adjustments that might come through that might be required. The actual NBV at closure will be determined once we go through the whole process of closing.
Oh, by the way, the Access Bank Kenya chair is in the audience. So very interesting to see that he's also listening.
Now you tell me after I have yapped.
No, she's taking notes. So maybe you've given it into safe hands going forward. I just saw her. As you say, the time frame is around 6 to 9 months. So we'll see. Is there a possibility to close earlier? Because I think you've done faster on TMB in terms of closing that deal. I remember in 2022. So is there a possibility of closing it faster?
We would be looking to close it faster. And if you recall, last week on Wednesday, I did contradict my boss and I said, I'm looking at a shorter time frame of June. He's looking at 6 to 9. I'm looking at 3 to 6. There's quite a lot of work to be done to close, but yeah, the aim, and I think the aim is from both ourselves and Access, is to complete this as soon as possible.
Thank you so much for that. So we have 20 minutes left. Let's discuss a bit the evolution of interest expenses versus interest income. The deposit grew quite a bit. I think you have 1.7 trillion now in customer deposits. So you can tell us a bit about what's making customers bank with you a bit more. And I think you should just take the chance to do a little bit of a sale and be a marketer and tell the audience why they should be banking with you going forward. So that, and also tell us a bit about interest income versus interest expenses and how that evolved in 2023.
Yes, I remember a few years ago, I was asked this question and it was around the time when we had two banks that had gone down with people's money. And my answer was, you should always focus on both return on investment and return off investment. And that's why I believe that if you deposit your money with KCB, you're guaranteeing both, because you can put and chase rates. Someone is offering you 25% on your fixed deposit, but you might not get your principal back. Just getting the safety element. And I think that our depositors and our customers do value that bit. And even when the likes of Moody's and Fitch write on us, one of the key areas they talk about is the strength of the balance sheet and ability to ensure that money will be paid back. The operating environment last year, as you saw, infrastructure bonds from 14, 16, I think the 18 one was this year, I can't recall. The year has gone quite fast, but the gist is the return you're getting from risk-free government bonds was quite high. So anybody coming to us, giving us money as a deposit, first question will be, at the bare minimum, it has got to meet 91-day T-bills threshold, which in itself was in double digit. So we had to play that game and ensure that we are giving the right level of return to the depositors. Second bit is the relationship we have on the G2G has helped us on a deposit front. The money comes once the oil is released at Kenya Pipeline, and the oil marketers buy, they deposit the money with us. So we hold that money and then start buying dollars to be able to then service that LC, letter of credit, within a period of 6 months. So that also has contributed greatly, essentially looking at the Kenya side. Our subsidiaries have also done quite well in deposit mobilization. If I look at KCB Tanzania and TMB specifically, we've seen quite a big growth in deposit mobilization in those two markets, which have contributed quite heavily. Interest income on the other side, yes, it has grown, and cost of money increases, then the right thing to do is to pass that cost to the customer. If you're in business, you want to be profitable. So we saw, and with our risk-based pricing having been approved early last year, we were able then to start passing those increases via rate increase to customers. That usually has a lag effect, because you do your computation, you say costs have gone up, we need to give our customers by law 30 days notice for us to change their interest rate. The new customers will start charging the new rate immediately they take their facility. Generally, I don't think it's an environment that is sustainable. I would really be looking and hoping that we start seeing a drop in the interest rates, because as access to credit is very important to spur economic growth. So if credit is expensive, it means that a lot of businesses are not able to access it, and then they're not generating economic activity, which leads to economic growth within the country.
So maybe we can discuss a bit the cost-to-income ratio. And after that, you can also tell us how the various subsidiaries that you have are doing, especially focusing on TMB. And since you added it, it's, I think last year was the first full year of incorporation, how that's faring and your experience around DRC. So you can speak to us. So start with the cost to income ratio and the evolution, the bit escalating. And you can tell us a bit about that. And secondly, tell us a bit about the subsidiaries with a bit of focus on TMB in DRC.
The cost to income ratio, I think we'll close at about 50.5 or 51%. It's the highest I've ever announced in my short career at KCB since 2015. We've always operated within the 40 range. So a number of items drove that. One, we did have the exceptions that I talked about on Wednesday. When you look at our total total costs, grew by 40% from about 60 billion to about 83 billion. But in there, we are carrying about 20 billion of exceptional items. One is the full year incorporation of TMB. We acquired TMB in December of 2022. So at best, only had a month of costs that were booked into the 2022 financials. In 2023, we've had it for the full year. So you've got 12 months of costs that are built from a like comparison. On, there's an outlier. That was about 15 billion. Then you had the restructuring, voluntary early retirement, both at KCB Kenya and NBK. That was about 2 billion. And we had this legal claim at NBK that was just over about 3 billion. So those are one-offs that came into 2023, not expected to recur. I say not expected to recur, especially for TMB. TMB, the cost will be there, but now you'll be comparing apples with apples. A full year 2023, versus the full year of 2024. So those are really the outliers, the ones that have pushed up our cost to income ratio in 2023. If I pull those out, cost to income ratio goes back to where it usually trends, about 46%. And that's also because our full year revenue target, much as we grew 27%, we did not hit what we had set ourselves there as revenue. On TMB itself, TMB actually had a very good year. It surpassed what we had originally set as a target for 2023. Granted that when we were setting the target, we had not completed the acquisition, so we didn't have all the information. Our budgets are usually approved around October, November. As I said, we bought TMB, closed the deal in 15th of December. So maybe we were a bit cautious in terms of setting out the target. But nonetheless, they did blow that talent out of the water. We still believe that there's a lot of value that we can generate out of TMB going forward. One, if I look at their FX income play, not very strong because of lack of products. And it's just an area that they have not ventured into. One of the reasons we brought in a group treasurer is to help us get the likes of TMB and some few other one or two subsidiaries that are also not executing well when it comes to FX. Two, the franchise of deposits that they have, especially in dollars, 80-85% of TMB's deposits are in foreign currency in dollars, which end up being placed with their correspondent banks, especially the one that are rated well, like Citi. What can we do with that deposit franchise to help within the KCB group and of course within compliance of the regulators across, including the one in DRC? Opportunities for bigger ticket items in terms of lending, leveraging on the balance sheet of KCB Kenya, which can take higher single borrower limits, that sits on the card. So I think this year we are going through an implementation of a core banking system. Just before we signed the non-binding offer with them, they told us that they were in the process of changing their core banking system. We requested them to wait so that they can pick a core banking system that talks to the rest of KCB Group's core banking system. And they started implementation of that in the middle of last year. We expect that journey to be completed towards the end of this year. And that also brings in a bit more of synergies within the group.
You can touch also on the other subsidiaries, but I think TMB has been the big one. So I think that's why I wanted you to highlight it a bit. And then we've touched on the other one, which is NBK, but you can also speak about the others. So maybe a quick overview of how the rest are doing.
So I'll maybe single out three. I talked to KCB Tanzania, which had a stellar performance. I think it's probably the best performing subsidiary in terms of year-on-year growth in 2023. And I think Tanzania, I would say we have been setting the base for a while, had a good 2022, but 2023 was to really show that indeed the fundamental changes we made bearing fruits. We also went out in 2023 and opened an additional 4 branches. We are looking to open a bit more this year as well. Well, I would say for almost 5-6 years, maybe even more, KCB Tanzania was stuck on the same network. We had not invested, and Tanzania is growing. So you've got new towns coming up, which are becoming economic hubs. And if you're not represented there, then you lose out. KCB Uganda also had a very good year. Again, it is one of those where we were saying KCB Uganda gives you one good year of performance, the next year goes down. So we just needed some consistency. 2010 was good. 2023 was even better. So, and that talks to also one, getting the right mix on their deposits. So one of the biggest issues in Uganda is that they don't have a problem in dollar deposits. In fact, they are trying to offload dollar deposits because it costs them when they go to on the cash reserve ratio. The regulator there looks at the total deposit and asks you to put your cash reserve in local currency. So if you have a big chunk of foreign currency deposit, you have got to go to the market to borrow for local currency to be able to fund your CRR. So they just getting that right balance and getting good customers as seen KCB Uganda grow. BPR is the last one I'll speak to. BPR having integrated the former BPR and KCB Rwanda into one in 2020. We saw now the momentum. At the beginning of the year in January, went live on the new core banking system. A bit of hiccup as teething problems expected with this sort of projects. But the good thing is by half year, BPR had caught up on their set targets and they were flying. Those three have done over and above TMB, of course, have done quite well. Not to say that our Burundi business, our South Sudan business have been left behind. They've also had some really good performance in 2023.
By the way, just a side question. What's moving the shilling from your perspective? Just a side question, if you... Because the shilling has been moving substantially the last month or so. What's your view on that?
If I had an answer to that, I would not be talking to you. I'll be sipping some margaritas in Bahamas. On a light touch, though, my personal view, one is, of course, that big heavy cloud of the Eurobond having been removed. The sentiment that brought back into the country is quite substantive. Secondly, I think you're seeing also flows. This last infrastructure bond that was, I think it was 18 and a half. There was quite a heavy participation by the international community. So again, those are dollars that have come into the markets. It's increasing the supply of dollars, which economics 101, supply demand, if you've got the supply gets better and you get the equilibrium, you'll start seeing the price where it's headed. I think also there's anticipation that the rate decreases in Europe and in the US, just a matter of time. I know the Fed Reserve had their meeting on Friday and decided to hold, but they still say we are going to have 3 cuts in the coming year. So early investors are looking at a profitable home for their capital. They're saying, okay, maybe before people start coming and in a flurry, let's be the early movers and go and start investing. Because you've seen also the NSE has started reacting. There's some positive coming out of there. And usually that tells you that there's foreign investments coming through.
Let's hope it can help us sip a margarita somewhere. The KCB share price is up 10% today, but we're happy man. But then investors were a bit unhappy last week when you told them you can't give them dividends. So maybe you can tell them a bit about your thoughts around capital allocation, which usually involves what you do in terms of capex, returning dividends to investors. So they were a bit annoyed. I remember one telling you, so what can you tell them a bit about why you had to withhold the dividends for this financial year, at least? It was the first time in 22 years, I think.
Yeah, and it was not an easy decision, to be honest. We do know that investors do plug in dividends into their cash projections and cash flow planning. I tried to hint at it in November when we announced the Q3 results. But I think the biggest subsidiary is KCB Bank Kenya. It's the one that pays the biggest dividend that is large enough to fund dividends by KCB Group to the external shareholders. The capital position, whilst it has improved from where we started last year, it has still not hit the internal limits. So we have the regulatory limit, which is 10.5 for core capital and 14.5 for total capital. We put our own internal buffer of 150 basis points on both, which goes to 16 and 12. The KCB capital has not yet gotten to that internal limit. So it would have been a bit reckless for us to say, let's pay dividends and you have not hit your internal capital ratios. We believe that 2024, the fact that we did not pay dividends will fund growth in 2020. And we are already seeing it. The environment is changing, but also the fact that KCB is not holding back on growth, we are seeing that return come through. So as I said, half year, we shall evaluate, look at the performance, look at the forecast and take a decision on whether to pay an interim dividend then. But I think it's very important for us to preserve capital for the goose that lays that proverbial golden egg for the group.
You don't want to kill it. But investors are keenly looking at that NBK deal with a side eye telling you, hey, when you close that, please remember us. I think that's what I get when I talk to investors. I hope you got that message from investors, right?
Yes, I did. And being a prudent finance person, unfortunately, I could not declare dividend based on anticipated money. I have to wait for the closure to happen. And when it happens, nothing stops us from issuing a special dividend, even without looking at H1 results. So there are a number of positives that I'm seeing ahead of us that should hopefully calm investors' nerves about dividends. In my mind, I don't think it will be about waiting till same time next year, a whole 12 months. I think there's opportunity and some good positive nuggets I see within the course of this year.
Thank you for that. Now, so before I give you the chance to maybe give us your outlook for 2024 and your priorities, you want to give it to investors. I want you to give a bit of perspective on what KCB's role is in the G2G framework, because that's also been a bit of a niggling point when you talk to investors. They want to understand a bit better what you do there. So speak to KCB's role in the G2G oil deal. And then after that, then you can give us your outlook for 2024. What are your priority areas and what should investors be keenly watching that you want to be doing this year?
Okay, so in terms of G2G, our government entered into a deal with the Saudi government and in terms of just getting a credit period to pay for oil that is imported and used in Kenya. Previously, what used to happen was we had an OTS, the OTS system, where an oil marketer will win the tender and bring in enough fuel for the month and pay. We were actually participants, heavy participants. We were market leaders in that OTS system before. We used to fund the key players in the market. So when this deal came in, the government picked 3 oil marketers who will be the ones distributing. So when the fuel is brought in, one of these 3 will either go and pick it from Kenya Pipeline, who are the guys who work the custodians, and then that is distributed to the various other marketers. So the only thing that has changed is that we have now a longer period to pay. Before, it was being settled almost immediately. The ship lands at the coast, letters of credit, those are then paid off by the bank and the oil marketer makes good to the bank. Now you have a longer period to do that. You pay it within 6 months. So our role as a bank is we issue those letters of credit. The size of the LCs, of course, has gone up because you're paying after 6 months. You're owing the sellers for a period of about 180 days. We issue their letters of credit. There was a framework that was agreed on between the national government, ourselves, and the three oil marketers. And then there's a regulator, the ERC, the ERC Energy Regulatory Commission, who would then now have a mechanism of taking any additional cost. For instance, if we bring a consignment today with a dollar at 120, and by the time you're paying, the dollar has gone to 150, it means that there's that additional cost there. So what the regulator will do is find a mechanism. He will increase the pump price, essentially. So the consumer picks up that additional cost, rightfully. And then that it then comes back to compensate and not expose the bank, because we are not in the business of oil. We are a bank. So essentially, that's really our participation. It has contributed to what I talked earlier in terms of deposit growth, because we hold that money for a duration as we convert it to dollars to service the LC. So in a nutshell, that's really it. In terms of outlook, 2024, obviously the big one is NBK completion, just ensuring that within the next 3 to 6 months, we complete the transaction and hand over the gem that is NBK. Now that the chairman of Access is here, I can say the gem to them and move on from that. We also are looking to put a big focus on commercializing or unlocking value. That's a word. Unlocking value on the other two subsidiaries that we recently acquired, starting with TMB, which I talked to earlier, in terms of we see quite a bit of value still there. And secondly, BPR, they are firing on all cylinders. I think there's still opportunity from a digitization point of view that will unlock some value there. We just started our new 3-year strategy, Christian, that transforming to today together. It has quite a number of pillars that we have to start today to be able to deliver. One of them is just being a digital leader, which means executing a digital bank for KCB. We recognize the fact that 70% of the population within the markets that we operate in are below the age of 30. They are unlikely to be the customers who will be coming to work into a branch in the future. So we've got to give them the sort of bank that they would want to interact with. To execute on a digital bank requires you to start today. This is a journey that will easily take 24 months. So that is a key focus. NPL continues, asset quality continues to be something that we will be looking at. And just to get our NPL, we put a very ambitious target of 13.5 by end of this year. So that is something that we'll definitely continue to focus on. I think those are the key ones that pop out of my head. So they must be the ones that I sleep, eat, dream about.
You better be doing that, because investors are watching very keenly. Before I let you give your closing thoughts, there's a friend here who's really asking a question. She will kill me if I don't ask you. They're hosting our Islamic Finance Conference, I think, next month. And she wants to know if you have any perspective in terms of KCB and its involvement in Islamic finance going forward.
Yeah. We actually do have quite a big division on Sahal Banking in both KCB and NBK. But now I can only speak much more KCB. It fits within our retail outfit. It does have a whole team. We do have a Sharia board that advises us on the products of the Sahal Banking. So yes, I'll say before I joined, I found Sahal Banking already in existence. If she needs to reach out, if she needs participation by the KCB team, I'm happy to assist.
I'll give them your contacts. So now you can give us your closing thoughts, and then we see you soon again for the Q1 results. Q1 is actually ending tomorrow, so to speak, in terms of market trading.
I'll say I barely saw Q1 because I was busy dealing with getting NBK signed and closing 2023 auditors. So I think this is the week that I'm feeling Q1, to be honest. But nonetheless, we've had a session with the business leaders across just to look at performance of Q1 so that we can also keep the promise that we will be reviewing dividend interim based on half year performance. Mukaya, in terms of closing remarks, I think I was going to basically close on the outlook, which I already did. All I'll say is hold us to account. We are where we are now, and we've given our outlook, our promises. And when we come to talk to you, I think we'll be announcing results of Q1 on March 20th, if I'm not wrong, thereabouts, or 22nd. Hold us to account. We want to know that investors are listening to what we are saying, and we can't just blow hot air. So I think I'll close it with that.
All right. We'll hold you to account. Hopefully you come here back again to let us know how you progress in Q1. We love engaging in terms of just keeping track of what the bank is doing and the key thing that you told us to keep track of for the year. So we definitely hold you to account. So on that note, I would want to say thank you so much for taking 1 hour of your time on a busy Q1 almost ending season and still sharing with us your insights on the FY23 results. So we'll be back for Q1 again, say in May. So we'll be back here again to listen to you. Thank you for the team. I see the KCB group handle also joined. I see a couple of people also joined. Thank you so much for taking 1 hour of your time. So thank you so much. See you again soon. So Lennox, you can say goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody who attended. I hope it was useful. And Kaya, thank you for inviting me. Enjoy the rest of the day.